from NPM, the National Association of Pastoral Musicians. This is episode 252 of Ministry Monday.
Ministry Monday is a weekly podcast about music, ministry, and liturgy, produced by the National Association of Pastoral Musicians, or NPM. What is NPM? NPM is a national association that fosters the art of musical liturgy. The members of NPM serve the Catholic Church in the United States as musicians, clergy, liturgists, and other leaders of prayer. For more information, go to npm.org/join. Have a question? Email us anytime at ministrymonday@npm.org.
Hello, and welcome to Ministry Monday. I am your host, Amanda Bruce. If you haven't done so yet, please subscribe to Ministry Monday wherever you get your podcasts each week, and we thank you for joining us today. Well, today on Ministry Monday, we return from our holiday break. Our first episode of 2025 features Stephen Warner, the founder and director emeritus of the Notre Dame Folk Choir, as well as the founder of the Newman Vocare Ensemble. Like many pastoral musicians, the Holy Spirit clearly is working through Steve and his decades-long work in music and ministry. Now, Steve is no stranger to the podcast. We spoke of his connection to St. John Henry Newman while he taught at the Newman Center for Faith and Reason in Dublin, and we also discussed the Catholic Church in Ireland on another episode. Today's episode focuses on his most recent project, titled The Contemplative Classroom. If you know Steve's music, you know that many of his compositions are ostinato refrains with an accessible singing range for most singers. Steve has taken this idea and began to make a curriculum for classrooms that cultivate healthy singing, mindfulness, and spirituality in a way that I dare say may not have ever been created quite like this. It's a great start for this Catholic Schools Week and a great way to begin our podcast for the year.
Today on Ministry Monday, I am chatting with Stephen Warner. Hi, Steve. How are you today?
I am great, Amanda. Great to see you and talk with you.
I know. It's great to chat with you, too. I love interviewing you for Ministry Monday. You are a repeat offender, if you will, in my in my podcast interviews, but for good reason. If anyone's listening and they have heard you on the air in the past, you know that in the past, we've had to balance many different time zones in order to have our conversations.
True. Yeah,
that's right. I believe the earliest one was something around 6 a.m. Eastern time. So
but that is no longer the case. No longer the case because I'm now in the Eastern time zone and 5 hours closer to everybody. So which is great. Yeah,
I know. It's much easier to schedule this today. But I'm so glad to chat with you today. Today, we are going to spend our time talking about something that you recently released called The Contemplative Classroom. And this is something that we're going to be exploring today. But before we really go into what that is, can you share a little bit of the inspiration behind the project or how it kind of got the idea to start?
Sure. Yeah, it's a great story, and I love to tell stories, so most of which are mostly true. So the roots for this project actually started in Ireland, and most people know that I spent a good deal of time over there, not just my wife and I for 5 years in Dublin, but also bringing the folk choir over pretty frequently from 1988 on. And I had been in touch with and collaborated closely with a John of God nun in Wexford in the Diocese of Ferns. And she had just started doing something with her two Catholic schools in her parish, which was introducing contemplative prayer to grade school children. And I was just totally intrigued by this. And I said, so what happened? And she said, Steve, you wouldn't believe it. They were more focused, they were calmer, they were better with their relationships with students, and even academically, they started to perform better. What kicked the project in the head was this thing called the pandemic. So they just got the program up and running, and they were seeing very positive results with their students, but there was no data for it. But the seed was planted in my mind, and I thought, this is really intriguing. The other thing that I will say is that from my own perspective, I really find it very rewarding to write in that style. Some people would call it a taizé style. And I think taizé is a very unique and beautiful experience, but certainly the whole idea of repetitive music goes beyond just taizé. The notion of doing music, and I'll try to explain this a little bit more clearly, the notion of doing music that is not linear, that doesn't start at A and go to point B with a refrain and a verse and a refrain and a verse and a coda. That's very linear. And in many ways, it's very task oriented. We start at one place and we go to another. But what is it like to do something that is repetitive and is not boring? The idea with repetition is not to be bored, but to let things sink in, to go deeper. We have prayers that are like that. The rosary is like that. And we adopt things the more that we repeat them. So to really embrace that style in this entire project was quite deliberate on my part. And not to shy away from repetition, because I think in repetition, we're conditioned to think away from repetition, to kind of think about constant stimulation. But there's a danger for that in the mind. And there's a danger of that in the spirit and the soul as well. So, and to bring this concept to children first and get them used to the idea of contemplation in the midst of their day. These were all things that were just sort of percolating in my mind. And my conversation with my dear friend, the nun in Ireland, really kind of set that going for me. Then what ended up happening was that about 2 years ago, I was approached by a wonderful high school, an Alliance for Catholic Education Associated High School in Mobile, Alabama. The name of the high school is McGill Tulin High School. And their director said, we're doing a spring concert, and I'd like you to come down and be the guest director for my high school choir, because all the music that we're doing is your music. And I'm like, wow, that's really quite an honor to be asked, except that I had four different huge events all over the East Coast leading up to that. But I said, sure, I'll do it. And we're flying down there, and I thought to myself, why did I ever say yes to this? This is crazy, so overextended. But when I got down there and I started working with these high school students, I swear to God, Amanda, they were the reincarnation of the Notre Dame Folk Choir. Mm. They were so talented, but not just talented, they were so comfortable in their spiritual skins. We had long conversations in their classroom and the choir rehearsal room about vocation and all kinds of great stuff. And before we did the concert together, I looked at all of them and I said, you know, if I ever get to be in front of a microphone again, I want to do that with you. So halfway through the concert, it's like I stepped on a rake. Halfway through the concert, this immense idea came to me. I'm looking at all these absolutely lovely voices of these wonderful singers, and I think, these are my evangelists right here. These high school students are my evangelists. I've got the material. I've got the concept for bringing a new kind of prayer to classrooms for children, and these are the ones that are going to do it. So there it was, and I was so kind of messed up by the idea that I didn't dare speak about it to my wife for about 2 or 3 days, because she says, what are you thinking? But I mentioned it to her, and she said, that is just an amazing idea. So, and we started working on it together, and so this past May, we were down in Mobile and we recorded 16 tracks for this recording, all with the high school kids. And they were champs. They remember, this would be like first week of May They got a few things on their plate as high school students, you know, coming up on the end of the year, and they were just absolute champions. So unlike a recording where you would be, you'd be using a click track, you'd be in a professional recording studio, we were doing this very much live. And we did do some sound on sound with the soloists, but it was all done with high school talent. So I was really, really impressed and honored to be working with all those young men and women. So that's kind of the background of the whole thing. I would say, and you and I have already talked about this a little bit today in preparation for this, the biggest challenge with this repertoire, it's not hard repertoire. The biggest challenge is to allow teachers to say, huh, we ought to give about 5 or 10 minutes a day over to this sort of thing, and get off the track of what's next, get off the performance track and say, you know, there are better ways to measure spirituality than just a test page, than just a theology test. And to actually get that into the under the skin and into the heart of the children that you work with. I think that's the biggest challenge. It's a different way to approach education. So there's a bit of that's, you know, I've as always spoken too long, but that's a bit of behind the thing.
I think that's a great foundation to start with right there. And it also shows the Holy Spirit also working through your idea, which I'm not surprised about. I do want to take a second though, and just again, kind of establish the parameter from which we're discussing. For those who are listening and may not be familiar with the idea, what would you define as contemplative music?
So I would think that probably the best template for that for most pastoral musicians would be the music from Taizé. So we could bring up any number of titles, Confutemini Domino, or Jesus Remember Me, or Ubi Caritas. So, I mean, I've worked with and actually visited the Taizé community several times, worked with the brother monks that are there. In fact, they actually came to Notre Dame about 15 years ago when Notre Dame gave an award to Frère Roger, the founder of Taizé. And our choir actually sang that night, which was an immense honor for us to do that. So the template that I would say is probably most commonly in the minds of everybody would be Taizé music. Now you yourself would know, Amanda, that Taizé music on a certain level is very simple, but if you're a cantor, it's not that simple because there are many challenges to where the cantor comes in, where the soloist comes in. It's not, in a lot of their pieces, it's not, as we would say, stacked lyrics. And you really have to be on your toes with that. I deliberately stepped away from that kind of writing and tried to make all the verses to be, if you will, stackable, so that they would be more approachable on the part of younger singers, but also more approachable from even a parochial point of view. So that these are things, if the cantor's coming in on a solo at the same spot every time and using the same melodic line, that also gives a sense of constancy in the piece and not like, whoa, what's coming up next here. Now, in the writing, I do put in some tonal surprises, you know, to keep it enjoyable and keep it lively. But at the same time, there has to be a predictability to that kind of music as well. So I very deliberately in this project embraced the whole notion of circular writing that draws people in deeper. And wanting to achieve that in such a way that it embraces a lot of the liturgical year as well. There are 16 different pieces in this collection, at least at this point. More are being written and probably will be added to as the years go on. But there are some for ordinary time, there's some for Lent, there's some for reconciliation, there's something for Advent, a few for Easter with Alleluias in them, and a couple of prayers as well. For instance, I think one of the most beautiful prayers that most Catholics do not know is the Memorare. So to approach the Memorare from the perspective of mantra writing, from a circular perspective, I don't think anybody's quite done that before. But this puts these prayers into the minds and the hearts of people as they're singing them. And the best part about it is that it's repetitive. So these are things that are not only tuneful and memorable by way of the tune, but they're also pedagogical in that you repeat them a lot and then you walk away with them as well. You walk away with the message.
So also in addition to that, as you write these pieces, do you also take into consideration now vocal range, given the fact that these are now especially used by high school students? Is that ever something that you consider?
Well, the proof was in how did we do this in the recording studio? And obviously, I was working with teenage students and not with people that were college students. And I will say that we didn't have to change the key area of any piece. So I was really comfortable with that. Now, where I would say my weaknesses, because I just don't work with it that often, is really, really young children. You know, like ages 4 through 8, I would not, and I know that their voices are much higher. However, I think that the listening experiences can be just as powerful for them. They don't necessarily have to sing this material. They can listen. And then as they take it in and they get older, they can obviously sing it as well. So there's that to be thought of too. But I try to use, you and I both know of a congregational range, you know, and I try to keep it right, very narrowly in that quarter, just to make sure that everybody would be able to reach it.
So then with that in mind, you kind of mentioned now a couple of different age ranges. What age range is the contemplative classroom best suited for? Is it high school? Is it more than that?
So this is very interesting because you have to market something and you have to call it something. You have to call it something. And I want it to be true to the mission of the idea by calling it classroom. However, one of the very first things that I was approached by after the project was done was from retreat people saying, "We're playing all this inane music in our food area, our what would it be called? Refectory, sorry. And they were listening to this and going, "This is just absolutely marvelous. It'll be a perfect background for people who are on retreat." I didn't even think about that. But as you well know, the church in her infinite wisdom looks at what gets done and says, "Huh, we're going to use it here too." So it was and is. I worked very, very closely with the Alliance for Catholic Education, I have to say, from the University of Notre Dame. I brought this whole project a year ago to Notre Dame and got a great reception from the faculty and staff at the Alliance for Catholic Education. They hosted an evening kind of concert prayer thing and brought in teachers from all over the South Bend area. And basically, it was like, "All right, folks, have at it. What do you think about this? Am I just nuts or is this something that would work?" And the teachers came up to me afterwards and said, "I've been waiting for something like this for 25 years." I was like, wow, I guess. So that was really kind of we took it step by step to say, if the teachers were on board with it, we're going to be okay. So I wanted to be very true to the classroom idea first because that's what its intention is. But it's going to spill over into, for instance, prelude music for liturgies. Will it perhaps spill over into liturgical use in a high school or a grade school situation? Possibly. And will it be used perhaps on the road on retreat experiences or pilgrimages or whatever? Could very well be as well. The only thing that's really needed for this by way of the listening experience is a Wi-Fi connection. So I think the roll of the dice when you come up with any kind of project is you got to name it something. And I wanted to be true to the compass point and say, ideally, first and foremost of all, I have children and spirituality in mind. Age range. And I'm going to answer that by being probably a little shifty to say, probably not, obviously not pre-K, but early primary school and certainly high school and even up into college. There have been so many great remarks. And especially when I was at ACE, I was working cross-generationally when I was with the Alliance for Catholic Education, putting this whole project together. So I had a pretty good idea that the things that I had written we're going to be able to transcend age. We'll see. The proof, you know, it's only been out for a few months now, so the proof will be in the pudding, as they say.
I think it also sounds good as an option for repertoire and choral library, or just hymn library, if you will, for those who are listening who are directors of music, but maybe work with a Catholic school. And you know, the thing with Catholic schools is not always, let me be clear, but in some situations, there might be a little bit of a gray area between what the music teacher at the Catholic school teaches and the role of the director of music and its corresponding church. So to me, again, this is such an easy thing to bridge that gap, where if someone who's a director of music is looking for something to offer, where their role might be in and out of the music school classroom for their students, my goodness, you know, weekly school mass could be very, very consistent in encouraging kids to build up that confidence of singing in church, which, I gotta be honest, you know, that sometimes doesn't happen with kids. They're a little scared. So this type of repertoire to me seems simple but effective with that repetition to start to kind of also build that confidence, but also possibly build the relationship between the director of music and then possibly the school teacher in the setting as well. So
These are
just my
all
two cents.
great comments. You know, these are all great comments. And I will also park my car on one other of them, which is it's not typical nowadays that a lot of Catholic schools have the luxury of having a weekly mass because of the shortage of priests. So I think one of the great comments that was made by Bishop Patrick Neri, who was on the testimonial page, was that this is such a great idea because it can turn a classroom into a sacred space without having to haul everybody over to church. And that takes a lot of energy and a lot of time to do. And trust me to the fact that I am not anti-Eucharistic here at all, but I know the amount of time and energy that goes into that on the part of the faculty and staff, and to try to find a regular presider. Those are luxuries that are not easily afforded nowadays. But to continue to ease too easily introduce children to music that is easily remembered, repetitive, and can be done in the classroom without having to change locations. There's a lot to be said for that kind of a concept. And that's even from a purely practical point of view.
I agree, and that's a very good point too. Okay, let's I love talking with you too because you have so many great metaphors. You say like, I'm going to park my car here. Well, I'll bring another metaphor. Let's meet where the rubber meets the road, and let's talk about practical application for this. So let's say someone's listening and they say, this sounds great. How do I find it? What do I do? How much does it cost? Let's talk about some of the details. So first and foremost, where do you find it? And then also, how much is this? Like, what are the costs involved?
So the website is easy. It's contemplativeclassroom.org. Contemplativeclassroom, all one word, .org. And it's actually coming up now pretty frequently right away on the search engines as the very first choice, which is nice to see. How much does it cost? The listening experiences are meant to be for free. So it functions in some ways as a dedicated YouTube channel. As long as you've got a Wi-Fi connection, you can listen to it all you want, no matter where, no matter when, 24/7. Along with that, and we wanted to really make sure that we were making this as accessible and teacher-friendly as possible, because teachers also don't have a lot of money to spend on this sort of stuff. So one of the other investments that was made on our part was to hire somebody that was the former member of the Notre Dame Folk Choir and went on to get a master's degree in divinity. To get somebody to actually write a teacher's guide for the pieces of music that are there. Those teacher's guides are also free to be used. So they're all found on the web page, and you can just kind of easily navigate to those. What costs money? What costs money is if you wanted to permanently download the album or a song, and that's a very small amount of money. And then what also costs money are the PDF arrangements. And these PDF arrangements are done exactly as you would see them with a major publisher, where there's a page for SATB, there's a page that includes the choir verses. If there's to be obbligato with flute or violin, there are pages for that as well. There is one price only, and I think we've kept it to $2 per song. No matter how much information is there, how many pages it is, because for us, this is internet based. And so it doesn't, whether the score is 8 pages long or 4 pages long, we've just made it available at a single price. We've also wanted to make sure that I think you have to buy 5 or 6, but not like 10. So we're trying to make it as affordable as possible and as approachable as possible for people. So the MP3s and the PDFs cost a little bit of money, but everything else is there accessible for teachers to use or anybody else as much as they'd like to.
Okay, and another practical application question. If someone wanted to incorporate one of the songs into, let's say, a worship aid, are these on one license?
They are not on one license, but if you buy things from this site, there is a reprint box on the back, which I have included just like I would for anything else, and they certainly can use it.
Okay,
So, yeah.
so it comes with the reprint permissions at this time, then,
It
too.
does indeed. Yeah.
Okay, all right, great, we've
Along with
got.
a nice little note to say, please don't take advantage of this.
Please
Be
be
nice.
kind. Yes.
Please be kind. Honor the composers in the world. Yes.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. But
Okay.
the I mean the idea with this is really, and this is why I work so closely with the teachers at Notre Dame. The idea with this really is to be a resource for Christian and Catholic education and to be as accessible as possible. I'm in a fortunate position where I don't have to worry about making money with it. So that's and that is not in any way to detract from the publishers that I work with day to day. But this was a different focus for me. And actually, it was very liberating to know that I could do this sort of thing with my own circle of composers and artists and not have to worry about the budget too much for it. So, yeah.
So these pieces, are they all written by you or are they co-written with anyone or anything
They're
like that?
all written by me.
Okay.
In fact, there's one that is maybe people would know, which was actually recrafted for this. I was very, very fortunate that WLP slash GIA said yes to it. The piece is "Be Still and Know That I Am God." You probably know it,
I
Amanda.
do know
So
it.
yes, but it was a very interesting story here. I was approached by a religious community up in Wisconsin, and they were like, "We want to use 'Be Still and I am, Be Still and Know That I Am God,' but we don't like the verses." And I'm like, "Well, it's for Psalm 46. I can't help it.
Right.
The rivers are falling apart and the cities are falling into the sea, and like, but be still." So they said, "Well, it's just not too contemplative." And I said, "Well, let me write to my company and ask them if they would be okay with me adding some new verses." And they were okay with that. So what I did is I turned to Rainer Maria Rilke, and there are beautiful verses on being that were rewritten for "Be Still and Know That I Am God." So there's an alternative set of verses for that, which I actually think are very spiritually mature, very adult, and yet still the refrain is very accessible for anybody of any age. So that was one little departure from an already published piece of music. Everything else, obviously, is new, brand new. So some of which I
That's
wrote
good.
when I was over in Dublin with the Notre Dame Newman Center, but most of it's just been a collective project over the years, bit by bit.
Oh, that's lovely. Now, are all of them in English?
Actually, they are. And that's another departure from Taizé, because for me, I have to think about this for a minute. I'm pretty certain everything is in the English language. Doesn't mean that in the future I may not go to something that's in Latin, but it seemed to me, in terms of approachability and on the part of students, that was the best way to go. The other thing, if you saw one of the comments that was made by an academician and a theologian, came from Claire Johnson, who's all the way over in Australia. And Australia has an absolutely fabulous Catholic school education system. And so I was very honored to get some comments from her on this, and to see that the net on this looks like it's going to spread, I think, pretty nicely. So there are already people in Ireland that are greatly interested in this, Australia as well, and starting to pick up some steam around the United States as well.
What are these like in terms of instrumentation?
Good question. My work with the folk choir over the years, and even with the Notre Dame Newman Ensemble, the Vocare Ensemble over in Dublin, and now here down in North Carolina, I'm one of those odd ducks that has never ever seen a problem with guitar and organ working together. So I don't apologize for that. I think that there are many of my guitar playing friends that think I've jumped ship, and there are a lot of organists that look at me and don't trust me. So whatever. But I find the beauty, the sustain of the organ and the arpeggiation of the guitar to be really effective together. That is to say then that the foundation for all of these pieces is going to have on the recording. We didn't have an organ at our disposal, but we had an electronic piano at our disposal. So what you'll hear in the recording is electric piano, guitar, Irish harp, and then a little bit of flute and violin. So, but the nice thing about all of this stuff is you think about mantras, this is all stackable. And like any kind of church music, you can approach it like an accordion. I got this, but I haven't got this. I can expand it or I can contract it as much as we need be. It'll still hold up with a piano and a single voice. If you've got the luxury for piano and four voices, that's great. If you've got piano and or guitar and four voices, it'll work that way as well. If you've got a great flute player that happens to be either in the kids' band or a faculty member that you want to add the flute line to it, that'll work too. But it's a question of look at these resources and you can stack them and use them as need be, as need demands.
So you alluded to this before, but if someone is listening and they want to start incorporating these into their classroom setting, their Catholic school setting, what would be the expectation of the amount of time they should set aside for something like this on a daily basis or a weekly basis?
So working with the model of my friends in Ireland, what they did, this was not like, a mass is going to take about 45 minutes and then you got to get them there and get them back. So you've got more than an hour. I'm going to say 5 to 10 minutes a day, 5 to 10 minutes a day. These pieces last like 3 to 5 minutes. And another thing that I would add to that, Amanda, is that when in the day this is totally up to the teaching staff. Do you want to use a piece to start the day? Do you want to use a piece in the middle of the day as a sort of sabbatical from all the stuff that's going on? Do you want to use a piece at the end of the day as a dismissal? It's completely up to the teaching faculty to figure out how they want to incorporate that into the landscape of their academic day. So I think there's a lot of flexibility there for it. This is the difference between linear music and circular music. Linear music, you got a lot of learning to do. Think about, and I'm not trying to deride anybody here with this, but think about the music of the St. Louis Jesuits, which I grew up on, and they're all my pals. But like all the nuances with the verses of Be Not Afraid, they're tough, Now, once after you've heard them for a while, you pick up on it and they're so lyrical. But these pieces that I'm putting out there are only 4 to 6 measures long. So they don't need a whole lot of time to make a part of your spiritual furniture, I guess is my point. And I think we've got plenty of the other by way of linear experiences, but I think that the circular ones that we have in our canon can probably be built up a lot more, and maybe through the avenue of faith-based education.
I love it. Okay, so just to say it one more time, because we've gone through a lot, can you give the address one more time, the web address?
Be glad to. So the address is contemplative classroom, all one word, contemplativeclassroom.org.
Great. Okay. And if anyone has any questions about this, is there a way to contact you on the website?
So one of the most important things to do when you reach the website is to sign up for the newsletter. You don't have to do that, but there's no way to stay in touch or to answer questions unless you sign up and get into the pipeline with us. And that community is growing as we go through things, and I'm probably going to end up having to learn MailChimp. So,
I can help you with that, Steve. We'll have another Zoom.
lovely. All these kind of things to teach old dogs. But the reality is that the most important thing is to, there is a contact us section, but the best thing to do is to sign up. And that for me, that also says that we can track usage, you know, who's using this in different parts of the world. So
Oh,
that's really
true.
helpful too. Yeah.
That's true too. Okay,
Yeah.
great. Is there anything else that I missed that you want to mention?
I would just encourage everybody to, this is probably not something that most people can do, but take about 10 minutes a day and listen to the repertoire. Make it a little part of your own personal quiet morning, and listen to the pieces. Probably some will touch you more than others. That's not unusual for anybody that way. Some may speak to you in other in ways. Take the time to do that personally, and if you feel it's worth it to spread that to your students or to your faith community, then take it the next step. And finally, I guess what I would say is, I want to mirror back to you, Amanda, how great it is, as always, to have a conversation with you and to talk about all these new initiatives. It's always a joy to dialogue with you. So thanks a lot.
Well, thank you, Steve. And thank you also for bringing this idea to fruition. It's just so inspiring to hear. This is a behind the scenes look. Before we got started recording, Steve mentioned that he's retired, but he's not really retired. And that is just so, that's such a pastoral musician right there. And but joking aside, it's so clear to me that you are still listening to your call. Your call has not ended because you have semi-retired. You're still listening to that voice, that still small voice, which I believe is one of your songs, if I know.
Yeah.
That
Thank
still
you, Clark.
small.
Thank you, John Henry Newman.
That's
So,
right. That's
yeah.
right. You're still listening to that voice and letting it call you into ministry. And even like you said, this contemplative classroom, your idea was to use it in classrooms. And then Retreat Center saw it as an opportunity as well. So clearly, this is going to continue to grow. And I'm so grateful for you to spend the time with us to talk about it today. I cannot wait to see the lives that it touches. So thank you.
You are more than welcome. And it's great to talk with you again.
Thank you. You too. Let's do it again sometime.
Okay, thanks.
Thanks so much to Steve for his time today. For more information about the Contemplative Classroom, check out the show notes of this episode at ministrymonday.org. The recording of the Memorare was composed and produced by Stephen Warner and is part of the Contemplative Classroom series. The theme music for this episode was written by Aaron Schaus, and this episode of Ministry Monday was produced by me, Amanda Bruce. That's all for today. With the Spirit's gifts empowering us for the work of ministry, thank you for listening. Have a great week, and we'll see you back here next time on Ministry Monday.